Segelreporter. Regatta Spezial. Der Podcast mit Carsten Kemmling, Miku und Stefan Boden. Präsentiert von boat24.com. Die Bootsbörse mit über 33.000 Angeboten. www.boat24.com.
Der 7. November 2025 und wir haben es angekündigt, wir haben heute eine tolle Gästin. Aber zuerst begrüße ich den Podcasten. Hallo Carsten.
Hi.
Und dann werde ich jetzt die Sprache wechseln, das Englische, weil Rosalind Kolper ist zu Gast. So, hi Rosie, how are you doing? Thanks for being in our show.
Hello. Thanks for the invite. I'm looking forward to it and I'm doing well.
I think so. I've seen on Instagram you've just came back from vacation in the Black Forest, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. We went 2 weeks to the Black Forest and actually the Black Forest and the Alps, and it was amazing. Honestly, we love camping and we love being outside. It was a bit cold, 5 degrees and sometimes some rain, but I just love it. It was really nice.
You have a new camper van, right? But because my wife came to me and said, let's buy a camper van. I found it a very, really nice in the Netherlands. And I looked at it and I said, where do I know it from? She said, it's Rosalind Käufer's old van.
Advertisement. Indeed. Because we're a family with three now. My other camper van I renovated myself, but we can only drive with two persons. So with a little one, we needed an extra seat. So after the race, I bought this camper van, and it's for me, it's a second house. I love to be free. I love to be traveling and exploring. So
sounds pretty Dutch. That's how Germans sometimes say, there's a Dutch.
Typical Dutch.
I have another one as well.
The trailer.
You're right. Going
on the left lane.
Yeah, on the left lane, exactly.
On the left lane.
And then driving 100 kilometers an hour with all the bikes on the back.
That's right.
Rosalind, before I start, I have one question because I have a sheet here in front of me. And one question, is there any question you wish journalists would stop asking you?
No.
No, okay.
Like it.
So we have this clear.
And let us talk. Too late now, right? So
Let us talk about a current topic at the beginning. Charal is the first boat right now on the finish line on the Transat Café Loire.
Mm-hmm.
What's your assessment to the race? Did you expect it like that?
Well, it will probably surprise you, but I didn't follow the race much. Actually, after the Ocean Race Europe, I really tried to switch off and focus on my family. And when I watch sailing on my phone, I want to be on the boat. And so actually on purpose, I didn't watch the race much. I try to focus on the family and being in here and now. So I can't really give you my view on the race.
Okay, so
but on the other hand, I mean you know the result. I'm just didn't finish the story about the finish because it's just finishing right now. But of course you know the players and you know Jeremy and so what do you think as you sailed against Morgan at the in the Ocean Race Europe as well, who sailed with Thomas Rouillon, I think. So you know the players, and so you're happy that they won right now, or is it just now you don't want to talk about anymore about Zimuka, friends, family?
No, like as I said, I didn't really follow the race, so okay. For me it's difficult to give my opinion on it.
Okay.
So you use the chance to recover from the Ocean Race Europe.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and I needed that, to be honest. I
can imagine.
When I saw Will and Francesca, I was like, it's amazing, you know, what you're going to do. Mm. And sail again, but I realized, I'm happy that it's not me sailing across. Yeah. And it's time to recover and reflect as well.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the Ocean Race Europe was really special for you. I mean, I live in Kiel and I wanted to see the start from land. And it was impossible to get there because there were so many cars, 400,000 people on land. school. So we drove back with my family. I have a little boy too. And we drove back home and went to the beach. From here, parked the car, went to the beach, and let's have a look there. And then I saw you coming back, and then Alakaranda Mapai.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was really, I think, what's going on? I didn't know nothing at this time.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's the next question from your perspective. How did you experience the race, especially with that crash and the start and then the surprisingly positive ending?
Yeah, like all with all, I'm looking back to a great race. It really feels like it was 6 weeks, but it felt like a year of pushing, of working day in, day out. It was such an intensive race. And we had a very extreme start. 2 minutes after the start in Kiel, so the first leg, we had a collision with Alexander Mapai. And yeah, we couldn't believe that. It was just insane what happened here. And yeah, that brought a lot of difficulty and intense moments to the entire campaign. But I'm very proud how we solved it. Because in the end, we managed to repair the boat and have the boat on the starting line again. And to fight our way back, we ended up third in the Ocean Race Europe. Very, very close to P7. That was a pity. I can just say that I'm super proud of the team that we built and what we achieved there. But I couldn't believe what happened, of course, in the first leg. That was insane.
At what point did you start believing that you could actually get back into the race after the crash?
From the moment that we canted the keel to starboard and put all the stack to starboard, so right after the crash, I knew the boat wouldn't sink. And then I believed that we could make it. Of course, it was a matter of checking, doing right checks, and the damage couldn't be structural. But from what I saw, I thought, okay, with a bit of luck and the right people, we can make it. So I kept the belief from the moment that it happened. And I was happy that the boat didn't sink.
I mean,
on the other hand, you were a little bit safe because it wasn't your fault and you were looking forward for the protest hearing, and of course you had good cards, or was it just... did you believe in that? Because it was the other way around for Beccaria and for the Italian skipper, and for the outcome of the whole race, it might have been an easier position for you, Bob, but it didn't feel like this.
Well, I really believed in the process, and I focused on repairing this damage and coming back to the race. And I believed as well that it wasn't our fault. So I thought, okay, if we keep on focusing, we keep on pushing and do what we can do in our control. And then I believe that the international jury will have an fair judgment. And that's exactly what happened. And of course, we prepared it very well, the hearing. But it's the facts are that it wasn't our fault, and that's how it went.
I think it was good to see you. I remember some pictures from the protest hearing and when you shake hands, and so I think it was good to see that this is just, as you said, it was a process, but there are no tough words against each others, that seems pretty relaxed, or as you said, as you described it.
It's sportsmanship, and this is what can happen in our sports, and no one wants this. We didn't want this, and Alexander Mapai didn't want this, and it's sportsmanship, so you move on and. You talk with each other afterwards and say, hey, that's shit what happened, hey?
Yeah.
And you try to help each other to make the start line again. Mm. And that's how it goes. And there's no anger or sadness. I mean, it's an accident and that can happen. And I'm just happy that both boats could come back.
Yeah.
And when we supported each other. So there's no hard feelings here at all. And
And that was redress for in the rules. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's good that it worked in the sailing. Yeah.
I mean, even without the redress given, you had made the third place, no? With the. Yeah, it was five.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
So amazing.
Yeah.
You are a kind like a not a kind like you. I mean, you studied it like team dynamics and that. So, but that was your first race as a skipper. How important was the team leadership, especially in that story?
Super important. And actually, I found out. If things like this happen, you cannot prepare for it and you cannot control it. But what you can do is rely on the people you're working with. And that's what I've seen when the crash happened. On the boat, we reacted so professional. Every single sailor stayed on their positions and we're like a machine following. Yeah, doing the sequence and making sure that the boat was safe. And on the shore, the people were from minute one calling with shipyards and starting up the crisis plan. And yeah, I couldn't be more proud than at that moment, feeling and knowing in what strong team we built, actually.
Mm.
And as well, I discovered from myself that it was actually funny because every sailor wore a heart rate monitor and we're analyzing the data.
Cool.
And Berenice, she's the one who's analyzing the data. She told me that my heartbeat went up from 145 or something to 188.
Wow.
with the stress levels like going through the roof.
Mm.
And but I felt so like when the impact came, I saw the boat coming, so I screamed to the crew, like, hold on. And I hugged my own winch because I was on the port side where the damage came. I prepared for impact. But I felt so calm and so focused. And I was really sharp and we were clear calls. And it's nice to experience that. When it goes wrong.
I mean, you as a skipper, especially with someone like Frank Camar, for example, on board, a real legend and also a legend in offshore sailing. How did you find this balance between leading and skippering and learning? Was it difficult?
This is a good question, and it's a question I get a lot of times. No, I didn't find it difficult. I really tried. And for me, it doesn't matter if you are Frank Amas, a legendary sailor, or if you are a newcomer. I really try to give the people around me the power and try to empower them in their roles and responsibilities. And I believe in a flat structure. I don't believe in a team what has a big hierarchy and a skipper who's saying, oh, you need to pull that rope. I believe that the more freedom and ownership and responsibility you can give the people, the better. And it was clear that if there are problems on the boat or if there are, if we can't manage with the crew to make decisions, like if there's a problem in the end, I will make the call. But it's a pyramid, but then vice versa. And that worked very well. And actually, a lot of people call Frank Amas, but he is one of the most cooperative people I ever sailed with. He is so willing to share his knowledge and so willing to cooperate and very respectful. And I would definitely work with him again.
This is cool. I was really wondering when I saw, wow, Frank is doing, I mean, he's trying to get some budget together to go for the next Vendée Globe. And I think he's kind of failing. I don't know what the situation is right now, but that he's sailing with you and I feel, wow, this must be is a great component for the team as well. But maybe I just saw him in Barcelona where I covered the America's Cup and for the French team, and he has had kind of the same role. He wasn't on top of the team, but he was part of the team, and it was good against big players as well. So maybe you had him on board because he is like this as well. And as you said, it was good for him. He's not a kind of a guy who wants to be on top of any timer.
Yeah, I think people have, he is a legendary sailor, but yeah, my experience is definitely it was amazing cool. to have him in the team. And yeah, actually I was surprised by how easygoing and how willing he is to cooperate, and he adds on all the departments. I mean, I think our boat became a couple of percentage lighter since the moment that he stepped into the shed. And that's just good.
It's cool, yeah.
So your entry into the Imoco scene from I think in the German spectator scene caught a lot of people here in Germany by surprise, even those who know the sailing world, because all of a sudden you were a part of Team Alicia.
Yeah. Mm.
And everybody was wondering who is Rosalind Kuiper? For the ocean race around the world, you were in the team. So how did that come? What do you think Boris saw in you that made him bring you on board?
Well, it was actually Will. So in 2020, I think, there was the first Ocean Race Europe. And I sailed on board AkzoNobel and Will Harris as well. He was the navigator. We did that project, and I think a bit later, so Will was involved already with Malizia, and he told Boris and Holly, he said, we're looking, I met that girl, Rosalind, and she managed to sail a couple of years with the Australian. She kept her head up, and I think she is perfect for our campaign.
It was like that.
Yeah.
He stays alive with Australians. Huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
When I look back, I'm like, oh, the Australians were easy peasy in comparing with the French.
Oh, yeah, really? Really?
that's how it went. I got introduced, and there was a click straight away. And that's how I got into Team Alicia. And I was there for, I think, a year and a half or so. And then after the race around the world with Malizia, Holcim offered me the place of skippering and building my own team. And that's how it went.
How did Holcim approach you? It must be a great moment for you. How even after it was a difficult story, because after the Kevin Escoffier situation, they took you as a skipper. How did they approach you?
Yeah, they called me right after the finish of the ocean race around the world. With the offer of joining the team, building a team, and skippering. And it was for me very double, because I loved to be with Team Alicia.
Team Alicia, yeah.
Mm. And I straight called Boris and Holly, telling them the offer of Holcim. And they said, Rosie, you need to do this. And Boris said, I can't offer you what Holcim offers you, and you should take this opportunity and go and learn and know that there's always a place for you in Malizia. You can always come back, but you have to do this, and call me if you need any advice. So that's the most heartwarming thing. And that's what I did. So, I moved on. I found it very difficult. But the Malizia spirit is in my heart. We're still good friends, and I follow them. And I called Boris often to ask for advice. Even we were competitors. Yeah, I called him to ask for advice, and same with Holly. So that was very special cooperation.
And didn't he say you can always come back? Or that's what you said sometimes? Yeah. So what about? You're on your way already? No.
At the moment, I'm in the Netherlands and overthinking my life again.
I understand. Okay,
who knows?
So you have no plans right now, or do you want to don't want to talk about your plans right now the Imoca circuit or something like that? So do you know what's next for you, or do you think about it right now?
Well, I'm thinking about it right now. Whole Team Holcim PRB stopped sponsoring Imoca campaigns. They announced that last week. Mm. And for me, that was no surprise. So yeah, that means my future is open at the moment. I would love to take part in the ocean race around the world. And the New York Barcelona race in September next year. I would love to set up an own team as well. But I have to say, I'm tired at the moment.
Yeah.
So since the race around the world in 2022, I didn't take a break. Mm. I set up the team, lead the team. I got a daughter in the same time. I worked until the day that I gave birth. And after 2 weeks, I start working again.
Oh.
So I feel like I deserve a break and to change gears a bit. And I'm open for everything, and I wish to find a sponsor, but I honestly need someone who can help me and who can drive the car, that I can take a break and that I can take over again in a couple of months when I'm recharged. So if there's any listeners,
who are many fans here. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I'm open to it. So and I definitely want to continue racing. It's magical. It's fantastic.
So what about the Netherlands? I mean, I was just in Medemblik in the sailing center again, sailing small boats. But to see how important the Netherlands are in the sailing world right now, I think they topped the rankings in the last two Olympics as well. And,
exactly.
Is it also a good spot for looking for sponsors for offshore racing?
Yeah, for sure. I'm really convinced by that, and I think the market is absolutely promising. So it's definitely a market to discover.
Mm. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it easier for? I mean, the economic situations we often talk about here. In this podcast, we have Miku is not taking part into the podcast today. He's in vacation and he is based in Lorient, so he has good information. That he said the economical situation even in France. So how tough is it to find a new skipper or a sponsor in this Imoca world?
It's a very good question, because I didn't look for it yet. But I truly believe that if I have the energy and I can find a sponsor. I just actually this morning I hung up the phone with Holcim and they gave me a reflection and feedback on the campaign, and they said it was a very successful campaign and the return of investment was huge. So they said it should be fairly easy to find a sponsor. And I'm convinced about that as well. I'm really convinced about that it's worth it, a sponsorship, especially in the sailing sport, because it's such a wide variety of what you can share. I mean, if you sponsor a tennis match, there's a story behind it, of course, but yeah, you win or you lose. And I think in sailing, it's unique, it's so emotional, and yeah, you can share different aspects. But I think every single person will find something what's interesting in the sailing. Either the technology, the human side, the nature, the animals,
I mean, I'm watching the media all the time. That's my job. And when you were on Malizia, I loved these videos because it was a special thing with you on board. The a lot of laughing, a lot of fun, a lot of really nice to see. It was different on Malizia on the last race on the Ocean Race Europe, but it was kind of like the same on Holcim when I saw your video. So you have something to give to a team that everything is, it's a special thing that you can give your team, I'm sure. And how important is the factor also for sponsors of social media content and reach becoming in the races these days also for the sponsors? Is it very important?
Yeah, I really think it's important. I mean, sailing, what we do is amazing. Sailing around the world, it's great. The racing side, the competitive side. But if you can't share the story, who cares? And I truly believe that you need to share the story. You need to engage people in order to continue our sport. Otherwise, we can't do our sport. And for me, it's very natural to do it. I started recording myself or recording some videos just to share with my family so they could get an idea of what it's like. And then actually Holly pushed me saying, hey, just post those family videos online. and yeah, that went well. It's engaging and people like it. And that's, I continue to do that. And still when I talk to the camera, I feel I'm talking to my family. And I don't realize that hundreds of thousands of people watch it. But it's super rewarding. To share the story. And then it's not, okay, Rosie is not there on a birthday or on a wedding. They know what I'm doing. And it feels like support.
It's so funny because I was just when I reviewed your race, Ocean Race Europe, you talked a lot about Caroline Brauer, who is a legend in this women's sailing sport. I think it's World Sailor of the Year as well, and of course she's a little bit older than you. When you were sailing together, and I mean, she's from the Netherlands as well, and did you share your thoughts about how was it in former times? It must have been, was it more, of course, it must have been more difficult for her to get this spot and in this sailing scene. And is it now easier for you as well? Or how would you say that?
Well, it's different questions that you're asking now.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But to start with the first, we shared a lot. And actually, when we do double interviews, I hear some of her stories and we talk about it afterwards. But for example, I decided I wanted to continue breastfeeding and I decided to pump my milk on the boat. So especially after 3 months, you still produce a liter of milk, right? And it was like of a sailing cow. And I wanted to store it. I wanted to store it as well. So I had a little ice pack on the boat. It was perfect because when Frank hit his hand, I had an ice pack for him. And he looked at me like, why do you have an ice pack on the boat? But anyway, later we shared a breakfast with fresh mommy's milk. So he was totally fine with it. But coming back to Caroline, when I did that, she was amazed and she said, wow, like good on you. Because back in the days when I had my young kid or other women had young kids, it was a no-brainer. You don't do that. You don't.
Really?
Yeah, you don't pump your milk on a boat. I mean, you're a sailor. Yeah, that's just crazy, right? But I said, okay, I have very good pumps and I think they can manage. So I want to do this. I want to make it a new normal. I mean, why should I stop doing that? You know, it's important for me. And I think this is some stories that you share that what was back in the days was not okay. And for me, sometimes, you know, the guys look at me like, what are you doing? But in the end, it was fine.
Yeah, we have to say that Caroline, she won the World Ocean Race, and she also was in your when she had a child already. Was it? In parallel.
He was like 2.5 or something. Yeah.
Oh cool. Yeah.
So as a mother, women often face unfair critics. We've seen it that, for example, with Clarisse Clémer.
Yeah.
How did you and your husband deal with that? Did you talk about it before deciding to take part in races, or how did you do it?
So what do you mean?
So before I mean, you decided I go racing, and you decided for a baby. So you had to talk.
Oh,
Yeah. With your husband with it.
Yeah. Mm. So of course I learned from the Clarice Kramer story. So I approached my sponsor and I called them saying, hey, I have a wish to have babies. What do you think? And they were super supportive, saying, okay, we think it's totally fine to do that. We will support you, but it would be ideal if the baby will be born in 2024, so you have enough time to recover and come back for the sailing. So my daughter is born the 17th of December. So it's on the deadline. No, but like, I made it discussable, and I always like to discuss things openly, and that's what I did with the sponsor as well. And they were super supportive to me all the time. So I'm very fortunate, and yeah, I think it's good to discuss it.
Did they say why they pulled out, or for you? I mean, you said it in the press as well, Holcim. You said they were super. It was great for them, but did. Did you know anything else as why they not continuing to go?
Yeah, like it's a strategy change. So Holcim bought PRB, I think, what was it, 1.5 year ago or something. Mm. And PRB has always been a massive sponsor in the sport.
Yeah.
I think the longest historical sponsor in IMOCA.
Yeah.
But yes, it's a change of strategy. So yeah,
okay,
that's it.
Okay, yeah,
yeah. But they were super happy about the campaign, and yeah,
seems so. I mean, more and more women are coming up in this scene. Is it now easier, and the sponsors are becoming more open-minded to women in this still male-dominated scene? But is it harder to find a sponsor, or maybe even easier now for a woman?
I find it a very difficult question, because I didn't try to find a sponsor 30 years ago. So I really find it difficult to answer the question.
Hmm.
I can just say that I'm happy and glad that there are more and more opportunities for women.
Yeah.
But that there's still a long way to go for women to equalize with the men, I would say.
I mean, it's great that it's like it is, that more and more women are coming. We talk about it here in the podcast many times. Is it so? Some people say that women have it harder on, especially IMOCA boats, physically, because men tend to have more strengths. On, you know what I mean? Do you agree with that, or do you see it totally different?
It's all very good questions. I have two things. One, I think, is that it depends. I mean, for example, Caroline and myself, we are above 175. So we were 5 to 10 centimeters longer than the French. And the strength was the same. The physical aspect, I really think it depends on the person. But what I think is that the boats are designed for men in general. At least Holcim was designed for Kevin Descouvier.
Yeah.
But I think the boats, the designers, can design the boats more adapted for women.
How would this be? What would be the difference? Some breastfeeding station?
Yeah, it's like a breastfeeding station in fridge.
No. Sorry.
A nice bed with fluffy blankets.
No.
For example, toilet facilities. Like for men, it's quite easy to just zip open. But the IMOCAs are so bumpy that peeing with the shiwi is almost, you can't do it. Mm. And when I look personally, after giving birth, coming back on an IMOCA where you cannot stand up, it was quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I really need to recover. I still feel like my pelvis muscles, and it's called a psoas muscle. It's actually a very unknown muscle, but I think a lot of sailors, they have to deal with it.
Mm.
It's a muscle laid very deep in the belly and the upper leg. that was totally blocked because I was bending over all the time.
Mm.
And I think, well, that's not a women issue, that the boat was too low. But I think, yeah, I could have helped myself a bit by, yeah, adapting the boat so I could go more easily to the toilet and yeah, things like that.
Like on Malaysia,
yeah,
you could stand up. It's yeah, but now it shows again. I mean, that it's fast as well in strong downwind conditions. It's not just people sometimes say. I think it was Jan Elias who said it is a bus compared to other boats. But
no, I don't agree at all. Actually, yeah, no. Yeah, and I think especially with the new foils, Malaysia is very fast in the light wind.
Yeah, and
it's a very good boat.
Yeah. Seems to be great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly it's a comfortable. It's like quite a lot of comfort and if I should choose to sail around the world in Holcim or Malaysia, I would go for Malaysia.
Yeah.
So
what people say.
So if you could choose, what would you be your next race? The ocean race around the world or the Vendée?
The ocean race around the world. I would love to do that. And then the New York Barcelona race. That's next year, September, as a preparation for it around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would love to do that. I loved crewed racing. I love team racing. And love it.
You know Conrad Coleman. I'm a big fan of him. We had him in our podcast. He's well, such a funny guy.
Oh, nice.
I imagine he has a new team, a new sponsor for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Should we call him? I mean, that would be funny. I would love the videos. Rosalind Kolper and Conrad Coleman on one boat.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't do the Vendée Globe.
At the moment, I'm more interested in cruise racing. I mean, I think the Vendée Globe is super cool, and then maybe at one point I really think, wow, I want to do this. But yeah, I see as well a risk. And then when I have a daughter, she's 11 months now. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to leave my daughter for 3 months.
Yeah, I can imagine.
If there's something wrong with the boat, there's no one around. Yeah, I don't know. At the moment, I'm not jumping around to do it. I'm jumping around to do the ocean race again. But the Vendée Globe for now, no.
Oh, well, then maybe you have asked Clarisse, and she did it, huh? They both did the Vendée Globe and had their little child over there. Do you talk about it? Do we have to imagine that all the skippers have one chat where they're talking about?
No,
oh, I don't know. Not really, yeah.
No, actually, not so much. Everyone is doing pretty much his own thing. Yeah. I'm a bit of an Einzelgänger as well. really,
you know
just
this word. Cool. Yeah,
sorry.
Cool. You know this word Einzelgänger, is it?
Yeah. Use it in Dutch as well. But yeah, everyone is a bit doing his own thing. For sure, I spoke with Clarisse, especially when I still was pregnant. And I was like, oh gosh, how am I going to do this? You speak with each other, but in the end, everyone is doing their own thing a bit.
So how would... Do we have to think about your situation right now? You said you're relaxing, but to find a sponsor for your next job right now, how is it going to work? Is there there's not a way everybody is doing it like the same? Do you like sending you approaching potential sponsors and ask them, or are you just waiting there and talking to your network, or how is it organized?
There's no written book about it, but actually what I explained, if you want to find a sponsor, you need to make a plan, a pitch deck, and you write down in a presentation what you like. Right? Or what you want to do. And then you approach different sponsors. But as I said, at the moment, I'm too tired to do it myself. So I'm really looking for someone who can help me. So you can help, like an
entrepreneur. You don't have a management or something like this?
No, I don't have management, no.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually weird because when you look at the footballer, he's doing the game, but yeah, they have a management who is talking with different clubs and looking at the future. And in sailing, it's not the case. You do a campaign and then boom, the campaign is over and it's you by yourself again. And that's a part of the job. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur in the end. And I'm sure I love it to find a sponsor and do that aspect. I really enjoy it to build up Team Holcim PLB. And I know I'm good in that, but at the moment I want to take a bit of a break, so I need someone who can help me.
On the other hand, I mean, I understand this, that you're trying to get your own project together. On the other hand, there are people like we just wrote about Morgan Lagravière, who won this TGV or Café L'Or the third time in a row, and he had a project by himself with Safran, but he is the guy who got a call if there's some crewed racing or some double-handed racing, and this might be this, a case for you as well. If somebody has maybe Malizia again, and they say we go for the ocean race, and we need women, of course, on board. It's a rule as well. Is it another level, or first you check your own project, and then on the other hand you're waiting or looking for opportunities to get on board somewhere else? Or?
Yeah, I think I explained how it goes, and that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we hope a lot of sponsors are listening to this podcast, and then they call you.
Exactly.
I can give sponsors. I can give you Rosalind's email address. I have it.
Thanks.
That's cool,
Rosie. We hope we see you soon back on board. But after your rest, your resting time.
It will be sooner than you expect, and then I probably expect to. So it's always I say to myself, no, I really need to take a break, and then in a couple of weeks I'm up and running again. But for now, I really try to believe that I'm gonna take a bit of a break.
And I think it's the best project of the world to start a business, a family. it's the most important one. Yeah,
It's always it's the same like really like my job before when I worked in advertising in Hamburg as a freelancer. Hmm. When I had a job, I said, okay, after this job, I do two weeks nothing.
Exactly.
I will really rest.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the Monday after the first day after the job was gone, I said, nobody will call you anymore. That's it. It's over. Next day somebody calls and they said, oh no, please not.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's a should be the same for you.
It's the same for me. I'm saying no, I've absolutely I am taking a break, and then my husband tells me, but you're working every day, darling. Do you realize that? I'm like, oh yeah, okay.
Need some quality time.
So
we
are sure that we will see you back on some of the boats,
and we would love to.
Yes, of course, don't worry.
Yeah, it was always fun. Yeah,
don't you worry,
Rosie. Thank you so much. Good luck for the future, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, likewise, was great to chat, and I hope we will speak soon, and then I can share some news with you.
Okay.
Okay, we do the update in half a year. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, bye-bye. Auf Wiedersehen.
Segelreporter. Regatta Spezial. Der Podcast mit Carsten Kemmling, Miku und Stefan Boden. Präsentiert von boat24.com. Die Bootsbörse mit über 33.000 Angeboten. www.boat24.com.